Sometimes I wonder if the last recession didn't hit people hard enough to realize that they needed to prepare, because we all know that these things come cyclically. And it's like people all of a sudden were like, well, I didn't know a financial downturn was going to happen. I mean,
So funny because people in the personal finance space have been talking about this, like the chatter behind the idea that we're going to have a downturn has been picking up in the last 2 years in particular. Mm-hmm. Like we've all been talking about it. I do think that you're right that maybe a very large segment of the population wasn't hit hard during the recession. I was hit before that recession. And then during that recession, I had a job that was a secured job. I worked at a university. Even though I had all that crazy debt, I still had money coming in so that I could start working on it. I think because of the experience with the previous recession, I was just always a little like skittish, you know?
You're on guard.
I'm on guard. Yeah.
But look at our grandparents. Our grandparents went through the Depression
exactly
as children and as teenagers. And that was a decade that it really hit before we got into World War II. But that was a solid decade of people being down and out, you know,
and
really,
the Dust Bowl.
It was like the perfect storm of everything. It was insanity. It's so funny because as a kid growing up, I would remember my grandparents, like, when they'd get to the cash register, they would put out every single dollar and like penny and nickel and dime that they were paying for something. Uh-huh. And I was like, that's just so weird. My dad goes, you don't understand what they went through as kids growing up. Like there was no money. And my grandparents, at least my dad's dad, grew up in Appalachia where there was nothing. I just don't think that people really thought that A, it was going to happen so soon, or B, that it would happen again.
It would happen here.
Yeah. And I think people's memories are just so short. They are so short. And if it doesn't hit you hard, it was like, well, that happened to other people. I'm fine. Like I'm going to be insulated from it until it happens to you.
Welcome to Michelle is Money Hungry. I'm your host, Michelle Jackson. I am so excited to talk about this topic today. In order to get to the show notes, go to michelleismoneyhungry.com/Jessica Garbarino. Again, that's michelleismoneyhungry.com/Jessica Garbarino. That's GARBARINO. Have you been waiting for the perfect time to start your podcast, write and self-publish your first book, or start that blog? What are you waiting for? There's no perfect time, as is evidenced by the arrival of a pandemic. Perfect is not what gets you in front of people. And in fact, whatever it is that you want to share, your blog, podcast, course, book, or vlog, really, it just needs to be done. In order to get started, grab my free toolkit, Do It Ugly. Again, it's called Do It Ugly. I have a lot of experience of getting things done ugly, and it's made a change to my life, my wallet, and helped other people as well. You'll text the following phrase, Money Hungry, to the following extension. It's 66866. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to like and subscribe.
I can't believe that I am going into 5 weeks of lockdown. 5 weeks of hanging out with myself, you know, doing my thing. And it's been an interesting experience because I might have a little bit of financial PTSD. And I've mentioned this before in other episodes, because for those of you who are unfamiliar with my backstory, during a recession, specifically the one after 9/11, Colorado was hit really bad. My mom lost her job in the airline industry. She eventually ended up having to live with me, which was a blessing. I could do that. But I was in graduate school. I was working part-time at Starbucks making maybe $7 an hour, not including the $2 on average tip. So like maybe $9 an hour. And I was heavily in debt and I was a financial mess. When I see what's going on in the world right now, and every Thursday, I'm just like, oh my God, what are the unemployment numbers going to look like? I feel like there's a deeper conversation that has to be had for those people who've never experienced something like what I've experienced, or the guest for this show, my friend Jessica Garbarino from Every Single Dollar. We're going to have a really in-depth conversation about how it feels to just live on the edge, to just have your financial life burn to the ground and like a phoenix resurrect itself. And my hope is that you will understand that you are not alone, that other people have experienced this at different times. If you are struggling financially, if you're not struggling financially, maybe this will give you some empathy when you're hearing about other people's stories. And I just feel like this conversation is so important. So Jessica, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you on today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You are in warm, one of the Carolinas. I always get them like mixed up in my brain and I don't know why, because I've actually been to the Carolinas, but anywho.
Well, I'm about 2 hours or 2 hours, 2 minutes to maybe 2 miles from the North Carolina border. So I'm in, technically in South Carolina, but I'm on the border basically.
I want to go to North Carolina to do a pilgrimage to Vivian Howard's restaurant. She runs this whole restaurant called Chef and the Farmer, and she has this amazing, amazing show on PBS that I watch. She has a new one where they talk about Southern food. Mm. Anyway, I like my big thing, it's going to be a mommy-daughter trip to go to Kinston, North Carolina, to go to Chef and the Farmer to eat that food. But anyway, when I do that,
now I want to go.
But no, you'll have to come and hang out with us, because it's literally, my mom and I are obsessed with this chef, and partly because of how she talks about like Southern food. And it's interesting for me because I'm Western, but my mother was born in Mississippi and like grew up in the Midwest, you know, as a Southern girl during the tail end of the Great Migration for Black people moving from the South to the North. That has nothing to do with this episode.
That's okay.
My point is, you live in the Carolinas, okay?
I do.
And if you could do me a favor, if you could introduce who you are and what you do, that would be awesome.
Sure. My name is Jessica Garbarino with Every Single Dollar. I have a blog called everysingledollar.com. I've been blogging off and on for the last 4.5 years now. I work in accounting actually as my day job, but my blog is a passion project of mine that I'm also working on. So a lot in finance in general, both personal and business.
Why did you start your blog? Like, what was the impetus behind that?
So the reason I started Every Single Dollar is because I became completely debt-free in March of 2015. And I had paid off $56,000 of debt. And that was an entire journey in and of itself, because it took me 5 years to do that. And then in August of 2015, I decided to start the blog. And then literally a month later, I attended FinCon, which is where I think I met you and everybody else in the personal finance community.
Yes, yes.
Literally a month after starting my blog. So I just wanted to kind of share my experiences and what I had learned about personal finance, because even being an accounting major and a MBA finance major, I still didn't have it all together when it came to personal finance. And so through life experience, that's where I really learned what I needed to about personal finance.
Right now, we are witnessing a historic event, both financially, psychologically, personally, like every way that you could think of. We are in what will go in history, in my view, as the equivalent of the Great Depression. And I don't understate this. Like, I say this very seriously. And I wanted to have this conversation with you because there are a lot of people who are really freaking scared. This is crazy pants what we're dealing with. And we are only going to speak to this pandemic and financial experience from the American standpoint because we're both from the U.S. But I do hope that people outside of the U.S. who are listening to the show will understand and maybe resonate with or be angry about or just connect with what we're talking about. And I want to get a little deeper into what happened to you during the Great Recession and how that experience has kind of changed your life. Like, because what you went through was part of the reason why you paid off your debt. So if you could talk about the Great Recession, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, actually, with the Great Recession, I got hit pretty early on. So the company I was working with was very tied in with the home industry. And we all know that the home, anything related to home buying or home building or home decorating was hit pretty hard early on in the recession. In fact, when I got laid off in March of 2008, that was round two of our layoffs.
Oh.
And I remember actually going to, we were offered some outplacement services. So I was at the outplacement facility and taking classes. And the only industries that were really represented there of people who had been laid off were people who were with home builders or home mortgages or something, again, related to the home industry. Now, my friends who ended up getting laid off in early 2009, they could barely get into the classes because they were so filled up with so many people getting laid off. But I remember being laid off. I can even remember, I think the date was even March 16th of 08.
What is it with March?
I'm telling you. And here's the crazy thing. So anyone who's ever watched the movie, The Big Short, talks about the whole mortgage meltdown. There is a clip from that very week on CNN or one of the big MSNBC, one of the big networks. And there's some talking head finance person going, oh, the economy's going to be fine, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, I know that was the week that I was laid off and we were all going, this isn't good. Like, this is not good. So even I knew reality was not what was being portrayed in the news. But I legitimately freaked out because at that time I was burdened with a ton of credit card debt. I had a car payment. I had student loans for my MBA. I mean, I was freaking out. And here's what's even scarier. And I had a mortgage too. I was more concerned about defaulting on my credit cards because my credit card score would go down rather than paying for, I don't know, groceries or electricity. I mean, that's how warped my whole sense of personal finance and priorities were at the time, because I had been so taught, like, keep your credit score good, you know, like, don't let that fall apart. So I stressed myself out completely.
You're not even lending at that point. Nobody. Okay.
Oh. Well, I will tell you, I had to buy a car later that year because my car got totaled in a car accident and I had to borrow money at that point.
Oh.
And the cheapest loan, and this is right when they froze all the credit right at the end of the year. The cheapest car loan I could find was for 7.25%. My existing lender would only give to me at 10%. Wow. Like, that was the lowest they would go. So anyway, I was freaking out in March. I remember the first Monday afterward and my mom, God bless her, I called her in tears at almost noon because I had started going through online job postings and I was responding to people, sending my resume. And when I realized I had kind of exhausted everything, I just freaked out. So I called her up and she goes, Jessica, you're done working for the day.
Mm.
Hang up the phone, go see a movie. And there was a movie theater across the street. And I ended up going to see Saving Sarah Silverman. That was the movie. I can even remember the movie.
Oh my God.
But I freaked out. And luckily, before I even had to have unemployment come through, because that I definitely would have had to stop paying on things, I landed a job. Now, it wasn't the greatest job. It wasn't a dream job. It was a job. But it scared the heck out of me. Later on, a year or two later, I had a move that I made to South Florida because my grandparents needed some assistance. My job, thankfully, it was a different job at the time, let me work from a distance and they were letting me contract. But within a couple of months of moving down there, this was 2011, it started drying up the hours. And if anyone knows South Florida, and especially after that recession that was all housing related, they had still not come back. Like, it was still really bad down there. And I couldn't find a job. And that's when I had to stop paying on my home up in Minnesota. And it ended up going into foreclosure.
Wait. I want to get clear on something. So you were living in Florida. Mm-hmm. You were paying for that. And then you had a home in Minnesota as well.
I wasn't paying on, I was living with my grandparents. So I was having to still pay for my car. I was having to, but I was still paying a mortgage back in Minnesota. So I needed a full salary and I still had debt. I hadn't become debt free yet at that point.
So why, and I asked this just out of curiosity, because I think other people might be wondering too, were you unable to rent out your place? Like, was there a reason why you couldn't do that? Was it just people didn't have the money anyway to even rent your place? Like what happened with your condo?
It was definitely not in an area that people were going to be renting a one bedroom, one bath apartment. It was in a very suburban area with a lot of families. I had tried renting it out with no luck. I talked to a real estate agent. I talked to a tax person about selling it. And they said, this isn't even going to get, you're not going to be able to find a realtor that's going to represent you because this thing is going to sell for less than $50,000.
Whoa. And
in fact, at the sheriff's sale, when it was sold, it sold for $35,000 and I had purchased it for $109,500.
Oh my. And how long did it take from the point where you just couldn't afford to pay for it anymore until the time they were like, we're going to sell this thing?
It was 6 months.
Wow.
And the thing is even though I had started working in like, I think it was late October, early November, by then I was already like 3 months behind. And so And they top on legal fees and they put late fees on and I didn't have the money to go back and pay them immediately. I just didn't have the funds. And in certain states, they go pretty quickly. Some states like Florida takes forever. Like my grandparents had a neighbor who hadn't paid on their mortgage for 18 months and they still hadn't started foreclosure process.
Wow.
Like it was because they were so behind.
Wow.
Luckily in Minnesota, it was a non-recourse state. So after the foreclosure had gone through, they couldn't come back to me for the difference.
Wow.
Of what the sheriff's sale had sold for. So I was
they
lucky.
Could have come back to you for like $20,000?
There were for the difference of the loan.
Oh my God.
But luckily they didn't. And I think the legislation at the time was also making it so that difference wasn't taxable as well.
Wow.
Because normally if the house at foreclosure sells for less than what you still owed, you get taxed on that difference as income.
Wow.
So it's no joke. It was scary. I got more mail from Bank of America than I ever thought I would. I gave it to my parents as fire starters. It was so much paper. It was crazy.
But how did it make you feel about yourself? Like, seriously.
I felt embarrassed because here I'm an accountant. I'm a financial person and I didn't feel I could get it together to fulfill on something that I had promised to pay for. I mean, I was literally down to my last dollars. I remember before I landed my contract job, I was literally in church on my knees going, I got nothing else. I got nothing. You got to help me out here. And by the way, I'm taking care of two older family members too, one who's having daily panic attacks and the other who's recovering from knee surgery.
Wow.
So there was so much emotional, mental, anybody who's a caregiver understands that, but then you have all this financial stuff also going at the same time. So it was really like involved. And the thing is all through 2010, I had really chipped away at a lot of debt. I had almost paid off half of it. But once I had decided in 2011, we really needed someone down there with my grandparents, I had to switch gears a little bit. And I was fine slowing down, paying off my debt, but I didn't realize that stuff would come to a grinding halt like it did.
I'm feeling a little emotional actually listening to your story because I get it. Like, I get what it feels like to try to do the right thing. And then you just feel like the rug's been pulled from under you. And you're just like, just give me a break already. Like, what have I done? You know, like, I've tried to focus on all the right things. And so what I'd like to talk about is what kept you going? Like, in the aftermath of all that, like, your caregiving for elderly people who, let's face it, as much as I love my elderly relatives, it's a lot of work, right? It's very emotionally intense. It's like, it's a blessing, but it's intense, you know?
Well, then I add the cultural element of them being Cuban and certain expectations that they have of family to take care of them. That's like a whole nother conversation.
That's a whole nother conversation, girl. So you have all these expectations and you're one person. Mm-hmm. How did you heal yourself after, like, emotionally after, like, losing your home, and what did you learn from that? Like, how did you start that process of healing yourself?
Well, I have to tell you, I took about 2 years off of aggressive debt payoff. I just wanted to feel normal. Now, I didn't take on any more debt, but I just did not get in that very, like, gung-ho, like, let's pay off the debt and, you know, 5 months or whatever after I'd started working again. I just gave myself some breathing room for a couple of years. And at one point I started beating up on myself because I was like, you've now wasted all this time. You could have been out of debt. But I'm like, nope, I needed that emotional space to deal with that because I was dealing with a lot of stuff with my grandparents and trying to figure out what the long-term plan was going to be with them, with my mom and her sister. But then in August of 2014, I had a friend that posted a challenge on Facebook and said, hey, what are the things that you want to accomplish in the next 5 years? And I thought to myself, well, I want to get this debt paid off because now it's still hanging over my head. By this time I had paid off my car, but I was in that tail end of trying to pay off the student loans. And so I got a renewed energy because I stepped back and let myself have a breather. And I think that's really important with people with rapid debt payoff. And I've talked about this before, that you have to realize that life is going to happen and that you have to give yourself space and the permission to not, like, crank it out in 10 months if it doesn't happen. Like, don't beat yourself up over that. Getting over the finish line is the point, and actually being in the process of being aware of it and doing something about it is one of the biggest hurdles. So people who get, you know, beat up themselves over, like, oh, I didn't get this done in this many months like these other people did. You don't know what their life was like. They may not have had anything happen during that time. Meanwhile, you're dealing with, like, 8 fires going on in your life. So I finally got myself across the finish line. And when that happened, I have to tell you, like, I cried that day. It was just like a huge emotional release. Like, I had finally done it. And at that point I was 100% debt free because I didn't have that mortgage that had gone into foreclosure 3 years prior. So it was amazing. I realized how much money I actually had to put towards other things after I had done paying off all of the debt. It was amazing.
What I'm wondering right now is, so there's this person, I'm sure there are people listening to this episode right now and they're like, we are at where you were, you know, you're at the end result. We're at the beginning. And maybe they're just sitting at their house because that's where we all are. And they've lost their job. They're freaking out. So what would be a couple of tips that you would give them specific to now? Because this is a very crazy time. We can't even really go out of our house.
I think there's a whole different layer of psychology layered on top of this besides the Great Recession. Because, like, that was very much more of a financial numbers thing that was happening. Like, we're dealing with medical stuff too. We're not just dealing with pure financial numbers. Like, there's real risk that people could get sick and die. Like, I have known people that have gotten sick and passed away from this. Not personally, but through other people or people that were really close to dying from it. So there's a different level of like basic needs that I feel need to get met first before we even talk about some of the other stuff. But I will say, it's weird. Like, I was thinking the other night, I was like, I should just watch The Big Short for fun, because now it's almost comical compared to what we're going through now. It just seems it's like a whole different level now than what it was then. Yeah. I think what I'll tell you, what I would say is, thankfully there's a lot more resources now than there was during the Great Recession. I mean, some of the programs that got put together to help homeowners then were horrible. In fact, I have family members that refinanced under that and they got hit even worse. But, you know, some of the stimulus money, hopefully, that's coming through is helpful. Increased unemployment is helpful for people. I think the biggest thing I would tell people is focus on the basic needs first. If there's certain things that have to get dropped, it's going to be student loans, some of the payments have been frozen or they're not accruing interest, I think.
Yeah, if you have federal loans, and before I say this part, everybody can contact your loan provider to double check this, because I actually thought I had federal loans, but mine were slightly different. So mine have been paused because I made the request. So don't automatically assume that your loans have been paused. Make sure to double check. So go into your portal. If they seem like they're still like needing to be paid, give them a call. The person I spoke to, so nice. Be super pleasant when you call, because you're getting a lot of freaked out callers. They're getting a lot of like, one of the tips I would say for any of this is call when you're emotionally healthy, not to cuss people out. Right.
Exactly. So, you know, they're going to be willing to work with you right now because there are so many people in crisis. That would not have worked when I was going through what I did in the recession, but there are so the companies now are so much more aware of what's going on. So I would, I would definitely tell you to call and work with your creditors, but more importantly is to focus to make sure you have food in your house, you've got utilities paid, you've got, you know, if you can pay your rent, work with your landlords if that's going to be a difficulty as well. I think communication is the key, though, with anybody that you owe money to. That's going to be the most helpful. And again, like you said, being pleasant goes far, far, farther than just coming in. Those poor people on the other line aren't trying to attack you or anything. They're just doing their job.
Yeah.
So I think those would be it. I think the other thing too is I think realizing that there's a lot of people in the same boat as you are. I think that's where social media has been good. I think there's been a lot of bad on social media right now with a lot of things, but I think social media in some of the groups that I've been in have been very resourceful, been very good to encourage people or to provide resources, to reach out to community members for help, understanding and clarifying some of the programs that are out there. So those are kind of really the basic things that I'm thinking that I would focus on. And to know that this is not forever either. I know it's so hard that when you're in it, you feel like this is the way life is going to be. Like I felt the same way. I was like, well, this is just how my life is now. And I can honestly tell you through this whole ordeal that we're going through, I remember telling my mom the other day, I said, I don't know if I see any sort of future right now. I was having a bad day. You know, it was just one of those, like, I just can't even see forward right now because I think we're all just stuck. But know that it's not permanent. It is temporary and it will move on sooner rather than later, I think, too. I think it will start seeing as we see the curve being flattened and things being able to reopen, I think things will start to progress. It may not go as fast as you want it to happen, but it will start feeling like it's moving forward again.
I think that's a really interesting way to phrase that. I remember when I first started paying off debt and it was just so hard. And to your point about like how you felt about having like your credit cards go like have bad credit and all that. And I remember just feeling so horrible. Like, how could I have messed this up so badly? I'm a smart person. Like, how could I mess up my life like this? And it wasn't that I messed up my life. I just didn't have the skills. Like I overspent. That was part of it. And I didn't have the kind of skills needed to use these tools in a way that wouldn't bite me in the butt. And I remember just starting paying off my debt. And when I started, I had like, I don't even, oh my God, like over 30 bills easily, like just so many debts, just so many. And I was getting, like you talked about all the paperwork from the bank. Ugh. Man, imagine that times 30 plus. Like I just had so many emails and letters and
phone calls
and towards the end, like text messages. And like, can you imagine all? So right now there's someone listening to this who's like, I'm getting all of that. I'm getting hammered emotionally all day long because these people are contacting me all the time. What would you say to them about how to manage your emotions during that time? Because that was hard. Like to this day, I've never really liked the phone, like as a talker. I like, if I see a number I don't recognize, I'm like, mm-mm.
And I felt the same way because sometimes they would call me during work hours, I had to tell them, you know, I'm at work right now. I'm not in a good spot to speak with them. What I will say, if you're not in a good place, I would answer the phone, make sure that you're answering the phone. But if you're not in a good spot to talk to them, just tell them like, this isn't a good time for me right now, or I have something going on, and then provide them a time that they can call back. Because then maybe at that time you'll know that they're going to call and you can be in a better frame of mind to speak with them. Cause it isn't good to talk to these people when you're emotionally charged.
No.
With the stuff that I was getting from Bank of America, I mean, these were like packets. These were like those priority mail packets that I was getting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it started like, I was super annoyed at first. When they would talk to me on the phone, they were like, and why again are you not? I said, I just told that person 2 weeks ago. Yes, well, we have to record this in our whatever. And I'm like, because I don't have a flipping job. I would just start getting to the point where I'm just, you know, I'd get so mad. I almost had to start making it comical. I started stacking in a corner all of the U.S. Bank like things that they would mail me that I obviously wasn't going to, it was all the paperwork they wanted me to fill out. And I'm like, you don't understand. I don't have money to pay you. So what I did is that I ended up putting that in a suitcase. So when I went to go visit my parents, they could use that as fire starters for their wood stove.
Oh my God.
So I had to make it like somehow a way that I could deal with it.
Take
the emotion out of it a little bit.
I have a question, and you don't have to answer this question. How much was that monthly payment, like that mortgage payment? Because one of the conversations that's come up, and we can dive into this too, is that stimulus check is not necessarily going to meet the needs of a lot of people's, you know, monthly expenses. So weirdly enough for me, I currently spend no more than $1,300 to $1,700 a month, depending on what's going on. I have slipped because I've been paying off debt forever.
Yeah. So
I started like really figuring out how to maximize my spend and minimize my expenses. Like I spent a lot of time on that, but I know that that's a very unusual situation. You, I think, had normal expenses. What was that mortgage like monthly? Because I think that will help other people feel not badly, like feel good about the fact that they're not the only one. Do you know what I mean?
Right. I mean, I had a mortgage and an HOA, and the HOA could have foreclosed on me as well. So.
Oh my God.
Because I was also on the board, so I knew that they could foreclose on me. So with HOA fees and my mortgage, I think I was probably paying at least $1,000, maybe a little bit more. a month. So that's basically your stimulus payment. I mean, basically.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, $1,200 could maybe buy a couple weeks of groceries for some people.
Right.
With families that are, with kids that are like growing like weeds. But I, it's that whole stimulus money thing. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how that's, but you know, if there's people that are filing joint that have, they get 2,400 and then right. they get, I think 500 per child under the age of 17. So it could cover a month's worth of expenses, but it, again, it depends on what those monthly expenses are.
If you were a, right now you and I are going to pretend we're money coaches. Okay. Mm-hmm. What would be some advice in addition to what you've already mentioned that you would give people looking at this, observing what's going on? What are some of your thoughts? I will share a few of mine, which is that it's my opinion that financially we're going to feel this for a minimum of 2.5, 3, maybe 4 years. Like, I think that this is going to last financially a lot longer than people think. Mm-hmm. And partly just because I literally am not a germaphobe. I am not, you know how like you have those friends before oh, yeah. this who are always like squirting sanitizer on their hands.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, freaking out. Like, the only thing I don't like is when people cough it out, cover their mouths, because that's just gross. But
yeah,
but I've never been a germaphobe.
Me neither.
And I am very reluctant to go out and about. I don't have the confidence that we will be at the point to manage this in a way that I feel secure with for quite a while. And for me, that's just looking at what I've seen other countries do really well. And it's no shade to anybody. It's just literally, I don't think that is how I feel. And I suspect that there are a lot of people who feel the same way. And they're like, you know what? We're good. We're going to hunker down and, you know, just, we're going to just step back for a while because we don't feel 100% secure about what's going on. Like, we're nervous. And what that means is, most economies run on confidence. And so that lack of confidence affects the economy. And quite honestly, we can't congregate. And so even if I were feeling confident, we cannot congregate to go to places to spend money, you know,
right.
to stimulate the economy. I can spend money online. And I was doing, like, it's weird for me because I'm living kind of the same lifestyle as before. Because I transitioned a lot of my life online. So like I do right. my online projects. I shop online. I was already using, in terms of how life is lived, it's very fascinating to me how this is also going to change that. But one of the things I'm concerned about is that people have this notion that all of a sudden everything's going to be just like it was in January and as these stay-at-home orders are eased. And I don't think that's the case. And I want them to really prepare financially for the fact that it's not going to be. So I want them to figure out ways to make money online so they don't have mm-hmm. to put themselves in harm's way. I want them to really, like you said, look at paying on four walls, food and transportation. You hardly even need transportation.
Right.
Can't go anywhere. Like, I want people to start saving their money, quite honestly.
Right. Right.
And then when they spend their money during the month, say to support a business, good or service, that it's very thoughtful. Like, it's so, like, in my case, I'm spending money on local food. Yep. I was always doing that anyway, because I have my
Me
other
too.
Project, which is Square State, all about Colorado. You already know that. But I'm making sure that I support local businesses when I'm doing my spending that I actually have to do. So it's generating a positive benefit in the economy. So given that long-winded, like, you know, where my thoughts are, what do you think in terms of the trajectory and what people need to consider? And do you think I'm being a little too conservative about confidence, and especially in light of people being upset and protesting and going out and exposing themselves to others? No, I don't mean mooning themselves. I mean, hanging out with other people. So
I think, here are my thoughts and kind of what I'm doing and what I would tell people to do. If you're in some sort of an aggressive debt payoff, but you have no sort of an emergency fund, I would halt any sort of aggressive debt payoff and start building that emergency fund. Because, I mean, it was nice getting stimulus money, but that money is not, it's going to run out. I mean, I think we just heard today that the SBA loan program already run out of money, right? So we have to be a little more self-sufficient and work on that stuff ourselves. So, you know, I've had people asking in groups like, hey, should I pay off this debt or should I invest it? And I'm like, do you even have an emergency fund? They're like, no. And I said, save the money because you don't know what's going to happen. I've been trying to read on the a book called The Great Pandemic, which talks about the 1918 flu, which actually my grandfather had. We found out after he passed away that he had been a survivor of that. He was in bed for 7 months with that as an 11-year-old. Yep. I think he was so weakened from it that he was in bed. And the only reason we found out is that he ended up graduating a year later from high school than he would have normally done. And his sister told my dad, well, didn't you know he had the 1918 flu? So I'm trying to read up on that. And I think what we're going to have is we're going to have waves of this happen.
Exactly.
If you look at any pandemic, it lasts for at least a year at its height. It's never not been that unless they find some sort of a very effective vaccine. I've talked to my sister, who's a nurse, who actually had the H1N1 flu back in 2009.
Wow.
And I said, what's different about this one than the other one? And she says, I think it's that flu was really bad, but it didn't take people out like this one does. And they were able to get a vaccine pretty quickly. Sorry, I digress on the medical stuff.
No.
The financial part of it, though, I will tell you personally, I am not planning to travel at all in 2020. Mm-hmm. I had a cruise that was set for August with my parents and one of my siblings, and we've just decided that's probably not going to happen. And if I do go see my family for Thanksgiving, I will probably drive. So I myself am not planning any of that. I am planning any extra money that I have right now. I'm being very meticulous about where I'm spending my money, how I'm spending my money. I am also cultivating ways to make additional dollars on the side. I think side hustles are always a great thing to have, but I think now it's even more critical. So even if you feel like your job is secure, this is another thing people are telling me. Well, I have a recession-proof job. You don't know that. I thought I was recession-proof as an accountant.
You're accounting. I mean, come on.
But even people with government jobs, I'm like, well, when government funding gets cut, your job will get cut too.
Well, so, first of all, the government didn't pay people twice in the last 3 years. They just stopped paying people.
Right. So they did stop paying people at some point. And my sister and her husband were in the military at the time, so they were delayed in getting their pay as well.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that's recession-proof. So if you think that there's something that's going to absolutely keep you from having this, I think there's a real false sense of security that people have. And I don't think you should ever rest easy thinking that it's ever going to be 100% secure. Nothing in life is guaranteed. So yes, I do think people need to mentally prepare for the next 12 months. I don't think people have to get crazy and panicked, but I think they need to prepare. And I think in something that I've talked about in a recent blog post is sometimes I wonder if the last recession didn't hit people hard enough to realize that they needed to prepare. Because we all know that these things come cyclically. And it's like people all of a sudden were like, well, I didn't know a financial downturn was going to happen.
So funny because people in the personal finance space have been talking about this, like the chatter behind the idea that we're going to have a downturn has been picking up in the last 2 years in particular. Mm-hmm. Like we've all been talking about it. I do think that you're right that maybe a very large segment of the population wasn't hit hard during the recession. I was hit before that recession. And then during that recession, I had a job that was a secured job. I worked at a university. Even though I had all that crazy debt, I still had money coming in so that I could start working on it. I think because of the experience with the previous recession, I was just always a little like skittish, you know?
You're on guard.
I'm on guard, yeah.
But look at our grandparents. Our grandparents went through the Depression.
Exactly.
As children and as teenagers. And that was a decade that it really hit before we got into World War II. But that was a solid decade of people being down and out, you know,
and
really.
The Dust Bowl.
And the, I mean, it was like the perfect storm of everything. It was insanity. It's so funny because as a kid growing up, I would remember my grandparents, like when they'd get to the cash register, they would put out every single dollar and like penny and nickel and dime that they were paying for something. Uh-huh. And I was like, that's just so weird. My dad goes, you don't understand what they went through as kids growing up. Like they just, there was no money. And my grandparents, at least my dad's dad, grew up in Appalachia where there was nothing. I just don't think that people really thought that A, it was going to happen so soon, or B, that it would happen again.
I think it would happen here.
Yeah. And I think people's memories are just so short. They are so short. And if it doesn't hit you hard, it was like, well, that happened to other people. I'm fine. Like I'm going to be insulated from it until it happens to you. And then you're like, oh crap, I guess it can happen to me.
I definitely don't want people to leave this episode thinking, well, shit, like I want to make the point. Like, I don't want them to be like, I messed up and I didn't plan. And you know, like that's not the point of that conversation. We're both very empathetic to the notion that, you know, you live your life and
Absolutely. Sometimes
you make, like, I have made how many bad financial decisions. There's a reason why I have this show.
And oh yeah. I had a closet full of shoes and I had nothing in my retirement. Like, let's talk about the last recession. Okay. Like I look at my closet now and I'm like, this looks so different than it did a decade ago.
Yes. So actually this is a great segue into the part of the conversation that I think I hope will leave people feeling empowered, which is this too shall pass. Like it doesn't, you might be feeling pain now, but that pain over time can go away. So let's talk about just how you started paying off your debt, what that looked like. I know that you did it rapidly at a point and then you took a break and then you did it again. And what is life like now after that journey? And how long did it take from start to finish? So let's break all that down.
So my debt payoff journey started in January of 2010, so a decade ago, and then ended in March. I guess March is the magic month, March of 2015. So it was 5 years that it took me to get through it. And I have to tell you, though, that life on the other side is pretty amazing. And getting through that whole financial experience, while it was painful, I would never give it up in a million years, because it fostered so much positive change in my life. I have savings. I have investment. I have, I could say resiliency, because I know I could get through it. Like I'm still here, you know, like I'm still standing to quote Elton John, I'm still standing. Like I made it on the other side. And I always thought the worst thing that could happen was that I would lose everything financially and I would be over with. And it's like, no, that's not what defines who I am and who I am as a person. So I think it's really important for people to remember that, and that we will get through this. You will get through this. And you will stand stronger because of it on the other side.
Did you work extra hours, extra jobs? What were some of the practical things that you did?
I did teach at a university in the evenings. So I did do that kind of part-time for some extra income. But really, I cut a lot of lifestyle back. And honestly, a lot of it for me was just paying attention. I just didn't pay attention. I was in my 20s. It was, you know, when everybody was making all kinds of money and I was putting stuff on credit cards, and I wasn't thinking of the consequences of my spending. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I am a lot more intentional with the way I spend my money than what I used to be.
Your quality of life has gone up. Like I can say for sure that my quality of life has gone up. One of the most important things that I focused on was because I knew myself. And so I knew that I was never going to be the girl who wanted to eat ramen. in order to pay off my, like, I was just never going to, like, I don't mind good ramen and I don't mind the occasional 29 cent package of ramen, like once every seven months or whatever. But I like, there were certain things I knew about myself. And so I had to, what, one of the things that I did was I looked at my budget and I was like, how can I do the same thing, but pay less and have the same quality? And so it was a really interesting experience of figuring out what I must have and what's important. So right now, as we're at home, I must have internet. That's a non-negotiable. I must have streaming services because I have to entertain myself. Mm-hmm. I must have good cell phone service. Mm-hmm. I don't chit chat on the phone all day long. Like, the only people I talk to on my phone are my mom and my grandma. Everybody else I meet on Zoom or like FaceTime, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But so it was really interesting figuring out what was actually important. So for you, what did you find out was important to you, like, throughout this financial journey?
Yeah, I think I found out that I was spending money on things that I just didn't care about, but I let other people guide that decision making. You know, there were some times where people wanted to go out, and I think maybe this was truer when I was in my 20s, that it was this whole idea of FOMO, like missing out on an experience. And then when it would happen, I'm like, that wasn't even that great for me. You know, it was like, I just spent this money and that was just not worth it. So I do spend money. Like, I actually don't spend a whole lot on food because I have found good places to shop. Like, I don't go to Aldi, but I go to a company, a grocery store called Lidl, which is a lot like an Aldi.
And you don't even have either one of those in Denver. Oh,
Lidl is amazing.
Literally don't know what that means.
They are, it's like a better version of Aldi. Like, it's okay. Got more stuff. But
I go to Sprouts.
It's super inexpensive though, and it's really good quality food. So I've learned to like to cook, and I realize I enjoy cooking. I do spend money on takeout, but it's got to be good takeout, you know, with local companies that I really want to support. I did actually pick up streaming services once I was at home. Like, I picked up back up Netflix. I had canceled it because I wasn't using it. But now that I'm stuck, in fact, I will tell you right at the beginning of this pandemic outbreak, when my mom was still here visiting, I actually went out and bought a television. My television blew out last July. I have been without a TV since 4th of July weekend.
That's hilarious.
And I'm like, you know what though? I'm actually going to use this because I'm going to be at home and I'm not going to be going to work and I'm going to need some sort of like social, what I would call social interaction or some sort of entertainment. So I paid like $275 for a TV. I was probably the only person that day at Target buying a TV because everybody else was raiding the toilet paper. And so I walked out of there with the television, but again, it was important at the time and for me. But yet I wasn't spending, like, I don't spend money to go to like get my nails done. I do them at home, or I don't spend money on a lot of beauty products, or I don't spend, like, those certain things aren't things that I value as much. And I'm not saying it's good, bad, or whatever. I don't spend money on that. But then I spend money on the other things that I like.
So I think it's going to be interesting for people to figure out what they truly value through the course of this, like what really makes them happy in the way that they live their lives. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, what is the first thing you're going to do once we get the all clear? Like, I've been joking when people ask that question, I'm like, everything, I'm going to do everything. Because weirdly enough, I'm an extrovert, but I'm an only child extrovert. Mm. And one of the things that has been great actually is the 17 and a half years of only child life, living at home and being able to entertain myself. Like, I'm perfect. Most extroverts would be losing their minds, but I'm just like, do, like, just doing my thing, like working on my projects. And if you ever get on Instagram, this is a good example of only child life, but she's a millionaire's child. Watch True Kardashian, Khloe Kardashian's kid. She does a lot of like little cute stories with her playing in her mansion, kids' playhouse. Like, she literally has basically a mansion that I could live in, but it's her playhouse.
And oh, she,
it's like, it's really adorable though. She's just like playing and doing things and making stories. And so it's really funny because I'm perfectly fine. And I know that, it's for most extroverts, they lose their damn minds. Right. But I'm just like, doing my thing. And as I do my thing, I'm sitting here thinking like, wow, how I'm going to be living my life post COVID. If I make it through this thing, it's going to be on. Like the way that I want to live is so different than what I've been doing. I don't want to call it regrets, but I mean, I'm going to be a lot more in your face, I think. And I'm just going to be a very different Michelle, and it's going to be fun. I'm going to have a lot more fun, I think, is the point. I was so serious all these years focusing on all these things, and I'm glad that I was, but this made me really think about life in general and how I live it. And I'm like, this is, you know what, things are going to be different after this. I will also say, I am so glad that I took vacations during debt repayment that I paid cash for.
Yep.
I'm so glad that I did that because I can't imagine if I hadn't, and then I would be at home for the next 2 years being like, I really wish I'd taken that vacation.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting because I thought I'm pretty extroverted. At least I thought I was. And I am pleasantly surprised how well I'm handling all of this. In fact, I may be a closeted introvert. I don't know. But I will say, because somebody posed that, I've seen a lot of people pose that saying, well, what is the first thing like you're going to go back to after? And I said, honestly, I'm not sure if I'm going to go back to a whole lot of what I was before.
Mm.
I said, I like working from home. I am less stressed out. It has been a blessing on my autoimmune disease of not having the stress of being around a bunch of people in a big corporate office. Like for me, it's been amazing. I walk 5 miles a day every day. I have for the last 2.5 weeks now. Mm-hmm. In fact, I want to get farther away from cities after this. Like, I'm not kidding. Like before that, I had dreamed about living on a piece of land and like having a smallish house, like nothing large, and having a dog. And now I'm like, and living in like a small town where you kind of get to know your community. Uh-huh. And now I'm like, yeah, that's going to be in the next 5 to 10 year plan, like for sure going to happen. Because the craziness that has ensued in these larger cities, like I lived in downtown Philadelphia in my 20s. That was a great time for me to live there. But I'm at the point in my life now being in my 40s where I just want calm and quiet and less. And this quarantine, this shelter at home has actually given me an idea of what that could be like. And it's not that bad for me. So, but I also think I'm going to be even more intentional about what I say yes and no to, and not necessarily just go because someone's telling me I should, or you should do this and you should. I don't, you know, maybe I don't need to, you know, like, I don't think I need to. I think I'm good where I'm at, you know? But like you said, I think I'm going to have more fun, but more fun in the sense that I don't need to like go on crazy extravagant things. I think it's going to be a lot more fun in the simple and kind of more, I don't know, it like I've gotten to know more of my neighbors in my apartment community just by walking every day.
I love my neighborhood. I've lived here for quite a while though. So I actually know my neighbors pretty well.
That's
and
great.
Actually one of my neighbors, we went to high school together. So,
oh my gosh, that's funny.
but it's so weird because he's 2 years older than me. Mm-hmm. And one day we're talking, cause I knew he grew up here, and I was like, dude, where'd you go to high school? And he's like, I went to such and such. And I was like, we went to school. Wait, we're kind of close to the same age. And he goes, wait, I graduated such and such year. And I was like, we went to school together. Denver is like a big little city in a lot of ways.
Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah.
It's funny because this experience has reconfirmed and reinforced my love of my town.
Yes.
Yesterday, I interviewed these amazing people, this amazing couple that created a community on Facebook to respond to the coronavirus. Like the whole story behind it is insane. And they started the group like on March 13th. Mm-hmm. And that day there were 500 people who signed up.
Wow.
There are now like 12,000 people in that group. And one of the things about this group that's amazing, and part of the reason why I wanted to talk to them on my podcast, Square State, was it is the most, sometimes I'll read a post and want to cry like in happiness because of how amazing the people are in this group. Like, I love the people in my town. Like, if someone goes into the group and they're like, I am a new mom and I can't leave my house and I need Similac and baby clothes and I wasn't prepared for this and we don't have furniture. And I've literally seen posts like this. They're like, we'll get you everything. We'll find the community members in the group who are my fellow Coloradans. They will get that stuff to the people.
I love that.
It's been amazing. Like, just talking about it gives me chills. So it's, this whole situation has also reinforced my love of my neighborhood, of my state, and I feel really good about it. But you know what I also love? I love being in the mountains. And so I'm really frustrated.
I could see you making a bolting for the mountains, actually, after all this.
I am so frustrated right now because in order to respect the stay-in-place rule, I can't go to the mountains because I'm in Denver and the mountains are like the base of the mountains are 40 minutes from my house. So that's been the most frustrating thing. And my idea of buying a condo in the mountain or a cabin, like I think I've talked to you about it vaguely, but I cannot wait to buy a mountain cabin.
That would be awesome.
That like, all I want is a little mountain cabin in my little place here. And then I'm going to be, as soon as everyone's vaccinated, floating around the world. But I cannot wait to be able to do both. I miss the mountains so much. I can't even express it. So I can't wait. So what does 2021 look like for you? That's like a crazy ass question to
ask.
That
feels like a decade away now.
It's like, you know what? 20 years from now in 2021, what does that look like?
I will have to say I am like, my 8-year-old self is so disappointed in 2020.
2020 is a crap show. Okay?
But that year as a little kid, I was so like fascinated the year 2020. And now I'm like, wah, wah, I want to go back to myself. Like, listen, kid, it's not going to be great at all.
It's so a quit dumpster getting your hopes fire. Up.
Yeah. Gosh, I mean, this year I think if anything, this whole situation, if the last one taught me to get out of debt and to really be more responsible financially, I think this whole thing is teaching me that I need to start building up my own business through every single dollar and some of my other ventures so that I can totally move away from corporate. I want to be able to have flexibility of my time. I want to be able to work at my home. I want to have a more relaxed and low-key life and just remove the stress. So really, that's my focus on 2020. And because I'll be home the whole year, I should be able to do that and focus on that. And then also, I think the other thing that I really want to do this year that I've always been acutely aware of, but to also find even more ways to help out in my own local community. And just being, you know, reaching out to people in need, and kind of being able to give back locally. I think that's a huge focus for me as well.
I want to, or actually I'm going to say it this way. 5 years ago when I decided to, in retrospect, it was the dumbest thing I could have done. And honestly, I'm glad I didn't realize how dumb of a move it was in certain ways. When I decided to take the leap and to work for myself, I had debt, had all these things. I had problems. But I really thought if I stayed in my job, I would never change my life. And I was worried because I was having anxiety attacks. I was having panic attacks. I was depressed. I was gaining a lot of weight. Like I felt like I would die. Like I literally thought I was going to have a heart attack and die. Mm. And so I decided to take a leap of faith and start working for myself. And for people who are considering working for themselves, for whatever reason, it's really hard to do. However, I am so freaking grateful and thankful that I did that, because now the way that my mind thinks about the potential to make money online, to like attract businesses, to sell ethically during a time like this, to make products, like the way I think about that is so different than when I first started. And what I discovered was it was a journey to become an entrepreneur, because I wasn't naturally an entrepreneur. I was naturally a spender.
I am too.
And naturally an employee, because I was programmed that way. So I think one thing to consider is if you are thinking about starting a side venture, hopefully while you still have a job and you're working it, but if you don't have one, understand that it's a process, that some of your money mindset things might get in the way from time to time. And then for many people, there may be a breakthrough where you're like, wait a minute, why did I make this so hard? And it's weird for me, because that breakthrough has been really occurring in the last like year and a half to 2 years, where I like the confidence that I feel now is so different than when I first started. I felt no confidence. I was very frightened. I still had a lot of other debt, quite frankly. Like I just was, there was so much risk that I took to do what I was doing, but I also was focused on what you talked about, which was I wanted flexibility. I wanted to pursue my own interests at my own pace. I wanted to challenge myself intellectually and do things that my boss wouldn't let me do. And right. I was qualified to do. And so that's been an interesting experience. This past 5 years has been so interesting, because I was so afraid when I first started. Like the amount of fear that I was dealing with was just insane. And for some of us, it takes longer to become confident in what you're doing. It just does, because you have to deprogram your mind. Now I'm just like you said earlier, bring it.
Yeah.
Bring it. I got this. And that took time. So if you're not there yet and you're hearing us talk like this, remember that it took us a while to get to that point. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It took a while.
Yeah. It's not just like paying off my debt didn't happen overnight. And no. It was a muscle that I had to basically build in getting in being conscious of my money too.
And for me, like I am about to step into a different space for my business, and really I'm going to be pushing a lot harder than I was before. And that's going to be an interesting thing. There's, of course, for me, I feel a sense of urgency because of the situation at hand, but also I just feel like now is the time for me to do that. Mm-hmm. And again, if you're at the beginning, your journey should not be compared to mine or to Jessica's, because you all start at the starting point that you start at, right?
Absolutely.
So with that said, I loved this conversation. We could talk
this
forever.
This was fun. I know. We could talk for hours.
Yeah. So I literally don't want to cut this off, but I literally feel like we can talk in the fall and have a recap, because
yes,
a lot can happen in 6 to 7 months. I also am thinking about, you know, right now I'm scheduled to attend a conference in November, two conferences, one that was already planned for that time and another one that was rescheduled for then. And I do plan on going to those. I'm still not sure. I'm not convinced that I'm going to go to any other events any earlier than that.
I have a wedding in November, and that's about it.
Whoa.
Not mine.
No, but I'm like, whoa, okay. That's an interesting time for a wedding.
It's in Florida, so that's okay time.
Yeah. Okay. I'm like, I'm sitting in Denver where it is snowing right now.
No.
It is literally, it does it. Last year, it snowed on and off until the end of June. So it's like, it's just one of those things. It's coming.
Yeah.
But so it's interesting because I have a lot of time on my hands to, I have one other thing I want to ask you about.
Okay.
So I was just about to say I have a lot of time on my hands to focus on these things. What's your take on this whole hustle porn, write a great novel, like crap that people keep spouting out.
Oh, my gosh.
I want to hear what your thoughts are. And define hustle porn for those people who are like, what is Michelle talking about?
So hustle porn is what we've all been subjected to probably for the last decade, maybe, where it's this whole idea that like you need to optimize every minute of every day to make sure you're being productive and efficient and also, you know, getting the most bang out of your business and moving things forward. And like, there's no downtime. It's constant focus, especially when building a business, or doing, you know, side hustles or really anything that you're trying to do, learn a language. I don't know. I mean, it could be anything. And I think it's gotten some backlash in the last year or two, maybe, where people are like, listen, people burn out when you try to go too long for too hard, you know, too hard for too long. And we've seen people that that's happened to. I have to tell you, I got very annoyed by seeing some people in the entrepreneurial space that were touting this whole idea of like, you need to make sure that you're not wasting this precious time because we're all stuck at home, and make sure that you're working on your businesses and building your systems and doing all of this. And I'm thinking, whoa, 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 time out. Like, there's some real psychological crap going on for some people.
Right.
Maybe not even a paycheck thing, but just like, I will tell you, the first 2 weeks when this started coming out, like, my mother had just left. We were doing contingency plans to get her back to Minnesota in case they shut down the airport. So I'm trying to juggle that. But for 2 weeks, I was literally just coming home from work and crashing on the couch. And I just didn't want to think. Like, I was like, what horror film? World War Z. I felt like I was in the movie World War Z or one of these post-apocalyptic shows where I'm like, what did I remember watching in the movie that I need as a skill set now to go out in the world? Because like just going to the grocery store, I felt like I had to put armor on to like be like, get in there and get out and don't look at anyone. And like, it was just like, do I carry a shotgun full of like sanitizer? I mean, I don't know. Like, it was just very bizarre. Like, it was like your whole worldview started getting tossed upside down. And for a lot of us, it really did a job on your mind, you know, like it really screwed around with a lot of
people's minds. I am tripped out. Like, every episode that I've recorded in the last couple of weeks, I'm like, who would have thought that we would be living in a freaking pandemic? Freaking, like, are we?
I didn't plan on it. No, I mean,
not on my 2020 vision board. Okay.
No, this wasn't on anybody's. I'm like if I would have known, I would have planned stuff differently. But it's just, so this whole idea where people were out there going, you know, you need to, like, there was a whole meme that was going out saying it wasn't, you know, you said you never had time for this. Well, now if you don't do it, it's because you don't have any discipline, not because you don't have time. And I'm like, no. Who cares if you get anything done during this time? If you wake up, feed yourself, make it through the day and go to bed, I'm calling that a success today. You know, like,
because if you wake up, let's just start with that.
I mean, get up on your own out of bed, right?
Alive.
It's just like when people were getting thrown into situations in their life that were just so out of the norm, with parents with kids at home and they're trying to figure out VPNs for their jobs. And I mean, I have a friend whose dad is dying of ALS and she can't go to the nursing home to visit him. God. I mean, he's within a couple months, and it really did a number on people's emotion. So for people to come out and say that kind of crap, I was just like, yeah, I need to turn you off because I can't even listen to this right now. Like, you're out of touch right now with reality. I can't. Yeah, I had to block that out and just refocus on what I needed to get myself through this and anyone else in my sphere.
I feel like that,
that's my soapbox.
I'm going to do an episode, I think, next week about hustle porn and the COVID situation, because I've kind of had it. I'm over it. And I like to hustle. And I'm just like, come on, people. I feel like there's also a lot of people who needed rest. My mom and I were talking about this because I've lived in other countries. Like I lived in Japan as a kid. I've lived in Europe. And I've spent extended amount of time in Australia. Like I've been other places. And the way that American life is set up, I don't know that people have experienced rest like this. Now, mm-hmm. I'm going to asterisk it with, it is not restful if you have your kids in your house, period. Right. End of story. Like, I'm not a fool. It is not restful if you are managing other people's emotions and that kind mm-hmm. of things. So separate from that, I'm saying we are really as a world collective, we're being forced to decide what is it that our life should look like? What mm-hmm. should our life look like? Yeah. And I'm going to be honest, I am so happy that I was like, I'm kicking my job to the curb. I'm working online. I'm going to take my own pay. Like, I can't explain to you how happy I am that I did that for myself.
Yep.
That is not for everyone. So there are other people who are like, I hate working from home. It's making me crazy. I need people. I like working in the office. And it's good for them to know that, right? It's good for us to realize these things about ourselves and the pace that we want to work. When I first started working at the university back in the day, I worked four day weeks. They were glorious. Like if I ever worked for other people again, I would only do 4 day weeks. And actually, as a result, even now, I tend to front load my week so that it's like Monday through Thursday, I'm going all in. And then if I do work for myself, I kind of like, you know, ease off the brakes, you know, Friday through Sunday. And so I think we're going to learn a lot about ourselves, whether it's how resilient we are, how much we need or don't need people.
Right.
Do we like the city that we live in? Do we not? Do we accept the leadership that we have? Do we not? Do we accept the lifestyle that we've been living or do we not? It's going to be very interesting to see what status quo will be after this. I've actually spent some time trying to figure out I've tried to find some first person accounts from the Spanish flu. And my grandparents were too young. They were born like in the 30s. So they weren't alive during that time. And I'm really trying to find like a firsthand account online about what was it like just living during that time and then mm-hmm. what happened afterwards. Because I'm really fascinated by this. Just how did life look? And I'm curious to see what's going to happen with us because we have the one thing that they didn't, which is technology.
Right.
And I think the technology is the one thing that is so fascinating in all of this. How those people who have access to technology and the internet have an ability to do different things than those who do not.
Right.
You know? Yep.
I mean, they didn't even have air flight really back then.
No.
I mean, the Wright brothers had just done their little, you know, Kitty Hawk hop, you know, like in the field. So like you didn't have that going on either. I mean, it's a whole different world a century later.
So it's literally like we're living the Minority Report or one of those futuristic movies you know what I mean? Like it felt so crazy, but now it doesn't. You're like, no, I could totally see that. Yeah. So it's just, right now, my mind is like blown on so many levels, and I'm gonna have you tell people where they can find you because we're gonna talk about conspiracy theories after this offline. And where can people find you? And if you have a helpful resource, definitely let them know about it, and I'll share a link in the show notes too.
Well, you can find my website at everysingledollar.com. I don't currently have, I do have a resource. When you go to my website, there is a budget, some budget tips and a template that you can download if you go to my website. You just go to everysingledollar.com. So it's easy as that. But that's where mostly you can find me. I'm also on Facebook, Every Single Dollar with Jessica Garbarino, or at @every_single_dollar, because I don't know what happened to the other name.
Is that for Twitter or for Instagram?
For Instagram, sorry.
How is it possible that there's another Jessica Garbarino? How is it possible?
No, it's the Every Single Dollar. Like somebody pulled that name.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Okay. There is another Jessica Garbarino, but she has an @JessGarbarino. I'm @JessicaGarbarino. Talk okay. about confusing.
Well, there's like 8 billion Michelle Jacksons.
I'm sure.
Well, I actually have 3 names, but I only use Michelle Jackson on purpose. So that's all I'm going to say. Anyway, thank you so much for spending your time. This was a good conversation.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.